Welcome to the Dreamcatcher Podcast, a place where you'll receive a boost of inspiration, practical advice, and tools to maximize your success and personal happiness. And that's not all. You'll also get plenty of guidance on how you can use your gifts, talents, and compassion to contribute towards making the world a better place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a preview of what's in store and to also receive a free ebook. To sign up, simply visit www.thedreamcatch.com. Now it's my pleasure to introduce you to the host of the Dreamcatcher podcast, Celine Chinoy.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to a Dreamcatcher interview podcast special. We've all made decisions we're not so proud of. Perhaps we made them prematurely, or we relied on some half-truths or incomplete knowledge, or we got sidetracked from seeing the whole truth. According to my guest today, one of the biggest obstacles when it comes to good decision-making, both in our professional and personal lives, is our unconscious biases and our blind spots. Known as a disaster avoidance expert, Dr. Gleb Sipirsky is on a mission to protect leaders from dangerous judgment errors known as cognitive biases by developing the most effective decision-making strategies. He has over two decades of consulting, coaching, and training experience as CEO of Disaster Avoidance Experts, and over 15 years of experience in academia as a cognitive neuroscientist and behavioral economist. During our conversation, Gleb and I talk about the different types of thinking errors, known as cognitive biases, and how we can become more aware of them. Gleb also shares why he thinks that gut decisions are almost always inaccurate and what we should do instead. Hi, Gleb. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Celine. Thank you so much for inviting me on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, of course. It's my pleasure. I'm looking forward to learning more about how we can make better decisions in all areas of life by becoming more aware of our unconscious biases. So thanks for making the time to tell us more about this.
Delighted to do so. And thanks again for sharing the opportunity to talk about this with your audience.
Yeah. So you're a consultant, a speaker, and an author who's written several best-selling books on blind spots and judgment errors, both in a personal and professional context. So I'd like to know, how has your own background and life experience led to creating this unique approach to decision-making?
Well, my approach is not unique. It's simply science-based. It seems unique because it goes against the vast majority of what folks hear out there, but it's just based on what we are now discovering about how our brain works. And that's why it's pretty unique, because it's really not out there in the popular audience. But we can talk about that later. I'll share about how I got interested in this topic in the first place and started in it. So the way that I got started in it was actually from my childhood. When I was a kid, my parents, just like the vast majority of people out there, made decisions with their gut. They felt something was right, they did it, they were comfortable with it, they did it, they were comfortable with believing something was right, and they thought it was right regardless of whether it was right or not. Well, unfortunately, their gut reactions often opposed each other, so they had a lot of conflicts because of that, as, you know, people tend to do. So, for example, my mom, she liked to buy nice clothing, so she'd go out and buy a $50 sweater. And my dad was kind of a cheapskate, so she'd come home and he'd yell at her, saying, no sweater should be worth over $20. And they'd go at it, and they'd have a number of conflicts like this. And as a kid, you know, seeing that, I already saw that that was kind of dumb and really not helpful for their relationship. And so they had bad financial decision-making that harmed their relationship. But the worst time with bad financial decision-making in the relationship with my parents. So my dad was a real estate agent, so he had a variable salary based on commissions. There was a 6-month period or so where he made quite a lot of money, but he hid it from my mom, told her he made very little money, probably because he didn't want her to spend on sweaters. And so he actually hid this money, bought an apartment elsewhere, and leased it out to some folks. Now, and a couple of years later, when my mom found out about this, she was very mad. She was very pissed, very angry, very upset, and actually ended up separating for a while. And she kicked my dad out. So he lived in his apartment where he used to have leased to some folks. And that was pretty bad for me as a kid. I saw my dad pretty rarely, and as you can imagine, that was not great for someone who was just growing up, that was seeing my parents having that sort of fallout over really terrible decisions, terrible financial decisions made by, well, my dad in that case. So I learned that nobody taught me how to make good decisions. Nobody sat me down and said, hey, kiddo, here's how I make good decisions. Clearly, nobody did that for my parents, and nobody did that for anybody's parents, because we don't know how to make good decisions. We just go with our intuitions, follow our gut, and that's how we make our life decisions. Pretty terrible strategy for decision-making, as I learned later. Because, you know, we're not taught how to do this in college. We're not taught how to do this in school, even in graduate school, even MBA programs. They don't teach you how to make good decisions. They teach you about macroeconomics and microeconomics and whatever, but not really clear, solid strategic decision making for that is informed by how our brain works. And unfortunately, what I learned when I started studying this topic, and as I started studying this topic, people started asking me about it. So I became a consultant, coach, trainer, speaker on decision-making, risk management, disaster avoidance, you know, like disasters like the COVID-19 coronavirus epidemic and so on. We can talk about that later. Now, there was pretty slim pickings in popular literature available on how to make decisions. And a lot of it was kind of crappy. So eventually I went into academia and I spent 15 years in academia researching decision-making as a cognitive neuroscientist and behavioral economist. So that's what my recent books are about. I have two books out. Never Go With Your Gut is about business, professional, career, finance, investment, decision-making. So everything professional life related. And that's one area. And my other book is called The Blind Spots Between Us. And the full title of that one is The Blind Spots Between Us, How to Overcome Unconscious Cognitive Bias and Build Better Relationships. And the title of the other one is Never Go With Your Gut, How Pioneering Leaders Make the Best Decisions and Avoid Business Disasters. So okay. Those books are the outcomes of all of my experience, 20 years of consulting, coaching, and training, and 15 years in academia. So that's where I am. That's what I do. And that's my expertise.
Right. And why I found your approach unique is because when you read books about spirituality and personal development in that space, they encourage you to follow your gut and to trust that inner voice. You know, that's the term that they use. And I personally grew up, you know, believing that your gut is actually very accurate. You should pay attention to that. And, you know, eventually I realized that it's probably not such a good idea because I didn't. So I'm really glad that there are people like you bringing this up and making people more aware of the potential pitfalls that can occur as a result of listening to your gut. So in one of your books, I think it's the one about relationships. So in that book, you write that we all seem to make the same thinking errors that sabotage our relationships. Could you briefly share what these errors are and how often they tend to get in the way?
Mm-hmm. Happy to. The errors are called cognitive biases. And let me share a little bit more about why we make them so that folks understand what's going on, why my dad and my mom fought so much, and why my dad made that terrible decision to hide his money, and, you know, why we have a 40% divorce rate in the United States, and why relationships can't seem to last. And, of course, you have lots of other problems. It's not only romantic relationships, it's professional relationships, it's lots of them. People make a great deal of mistakes in professional relationships and screw those up. Civic relationships, I mean, look at how polarized our country is right now. And that's all resulting from how our brain is wired. The problems with how our brain is wired and why you should never go with your gut, you could simply go with your gut, it's a bad idea, is because our gut, our intuitions, our emotions, our heart, our primal natural savage state, the primal state, to quote Tony Robbins, you know, he says, be primal, go with your savage or whatnot. That's not adapted for the modern environment. That primal state is adapted for the natural savage environment when back in way, way, way back ago, when we were hunters and foragers living in the African savannah, in small tribes of 15 people to 150 people. That's what we're adapted for. And that's what our gut intuitions tell us to do, to follow that route. So think about it. We had, in that environment, we had some very serious situations which are very different from the modern environment. Now think about the fight or flight response. You probably heard of that. You might have heard of it as a saber-tooth tiger response, right? We had to jump at 100 shadows in order to flee successfully from that one saber-tooth tiger or defend ourselves from an attacking tribal member. So in that environment, that was very important. People who didn't do that, they died. You know, so we are the descendants of all of those ancestors who successfully had the very strong fight or flight instincts. Now in the modern environment, you might notice there are many less saber-toothed tigers, but we still react to perceived threats as though they're saber-toothed tigers. If you get a nasty email from a client, or if you get, you know, some kind of disturbing message from someone with whom you're in a relationship with, that temptation, if you hear someone who's in your relationship with say something that is upsetting to you, the temptation is to have a fight or flight response. The flight response in that case would be to ignore it or to ignore the email from a client, let's say that has some concerning constructive critical feedback, or from your relationship partner, to ignore it, you know, sweep it under the rug, not worry about it. That's the flight instinct. Or the fight instinct, which is to, when you're in a business interaction, to write back a quick email saying, no, I'm right, you're wrong, you're a jerk. Or in a personal relationship, to do the same thing. And then you start getting the same sort of situation that my parents got into, increasingly escalating conflicts and tensions and arguments. They both had the fight response. They were both fighters. So that is bad. That is really harmful, very bad in the modern environment. The constructive thing to do for the sake of our relationships and for the sake of our careers is to look at that feedback, whether by someone we're in a romantic relationship with, personal, civic, whatever, professional relationship, client, incorporate it, slow down, not respond right away, slow down, incorporate the feedback, think about, hey, what's this feedback about? How can I address it effectively? What should I do in response to this feedback? How should I change my thinking about myself in response to this feedback? And then how should I act differently? And then, of course, you probably want to thank the person for giving you feedback, because it's very valuable to have constructive critical feedback. However, that's very not intuitive for us to do. That goes very much against our intuitions because of that defensive response or the aggressive response. So this is the fight or flight instinct is just one out of very, very, very many bad intuitions, bad emotions, harmful instincts that really causes a great deal of damage. And these are called cognitive biases. So the cognitive biases are the specific judgment errors that we make that cause us to deviate away from the right relationship, from the right actions in relationships, from the right actions in our professional careers. And the right actions in our relationships, of course, are ones that build and our relationships make them more constructive. The ones for our professional career are the ones that help us achieve our professional goals, whatever they might be. And because these cognitive biases, because we know about them, my books, the Never Go With Your Gut, talks about the 30 most dangerous ones in business interactions. The blind spots between us talks about the 30 most dangerous ones in our relationships. There are, of course, other ways of finding out about them. You want to learn about them and address them effectively in your interactions.
Okay, that's interesting. And what are the most common cognitive biases that hurt our relationships specifically? And how can we become more aware of them when we're actually experiencing them?
Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example from my own interactions and my own relationships. The worst one for me in relationships and other areas, by the way, is called the optimism bias. So the optimism bias is where I tend, as a person, tend to be very optimistic about the future. I tend to be risk blind to potential negative problems in my relationships, and I tend to have too high expectations of other people and of myself as well, but other people that, you know, relating to relationships about other people, that's the big problem for me. And so as a result of my way too high expectations for other people and my risk blindness, I sometimes say things that I haven't thought through the consequences of saying these things that hurt other people or upset them or make them concerned. So that's kind of one area where the optimism bias caused me a lot of problems, because I don't tend to intuitively think about how my statements, whether it's things I say in person or emails, can be negatively interpreted. And they can be sometimes, especially in emails where you don't have the tone. Or when I have too high expectations for other people, when I see them not doing things that I think they should be doing, that they agreed to do, I thought we had a common understanding that they'd be doing these things, I feel very frustrated with them and upset with them. And that both of those things, of course, hurt my relationships with these people, and that's a bad, bad problem for me that I have learned how to deal with over time, although it's not easy. Of course, you can have the opposite problem, which is called the pessimism bias, where you tend to be too pessimistic about other people. You have too low expectations for them, and you tend to look only at the negative things, not the positive things. Oh, so that can be a serious problem as well.
I'm familiar with that one.
Okay, so so this is all on the spectrum. Some people tend to have the more on the spectrum of the optimism bias, and some tend to be more on the spectrum of the pessimism bias. So those are just two, again, out of 30 dangerous judgment errors that I talk about relationships. Another one is called the fundamental attribution error. So this is a really interesting one. When you think, let's say you're driving and you see somebody cut you off, what do you intuitively think about this person? Well, you think this person's a jerk.
They're nasty, right?
That they cut you off.
How dare they?
How dare they? Exactly. You know, they cut in front of you in the line or something like that. But anything where they do something that is, you know, not normative or somehow upsetting to you. However, when you cut off somebody, you don't think that you're a jerk.
I'm in a hurry, or, you know, this guy's too slow, or.
Yeah, exactly. Now, why are they like in the left lane of the highway just driving the speed limit, right?
Right.
You know, how incompetent of them. So, exactly. So all of these things, we don't think you're a jerk. You think you're doing the right thing. And so this is part of a whole big series of problems in our relationships. I mean, when somebody doesn't put down the toilet seat or somebody doesn't raise the toilet seat, you know, the temptation is to think that the other person is a jerk. That's, you know, in relationships. And when somebody doesn't, you know, get the milk or something like that, so many things. And of course, so many bigger things as well, you know, when you're making your vacation plans and you're not, you know, you think the other person should have done some vacation planning and they didn't, and you blame them.
And I was just thinking that this also plays out on a larger scale, like between countries, where countries are pointing fingers at each other and there are misunderstandings, you know, like that's on a, you know, much larger scale.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So this is hurts relationships in politics, in civic engagement, in business. So we're just focusing on the romantic relationships, but and social relationships, but it hurts us in all life areas. So attributing to other people what we tend to do, just because of our intuitions, we tend to make hostile attributions or negative attributions to other people because of what we see in the environment. So somebody doesn't put their socks in the laundry, we think that they're a bad person for not putting their socks in the laundry when we clearly talk to them about putting socks in the laundry. But that person might be thinking that, oh, I'm exhausted. I've been, you know, running around all day, taking care of the kids, and, you know, just very, very tired. And, you know, I'm feeling sick, you know, this. So I'm, you know, just don't have the energy to put my socks in the laundry. So that's kind of, you know,
but Gleb,
that's their perspective.
Gleb, in the moment, like in that moment, you might be so tired, or you might be so like, it's tough to keep that in mind, you know. It's like, oh, I think this is a cognitive bias and I should be more understanding. So it's just about, I think you have to learn to become more aware of when this plays out, so it comes to you naturally, because, or else we'll just automatically just think the person is wrong.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. So we automatically think the person is wrong. Our gut intuition tells us this person is wrong. So what my book is about, the relationships book, The Never Go With Your Gut, is about the same thing in business situations, is how to retrain yourself from that natural primitive intuitions to actually having effective responses that are not natural, primitive, and savage, but are civilized responses. And what does civilized mean? Well, it means civilized is adaptive to the modern environment, that you are well adapted to where you are right now, to the current world. So you need to retrain yourself. You need to retrain your intuitions because they are not a good fit for the modern environment. And if you want to actually make the right choice for your relationship, you need to retrain yourself. Just like hopefully you've retrained yourself to not eat a box of dozen donuts when you have a dozen donuts in front of you. Now, for some reason, Krispy Kreme, Dunkin' Donuts, and other donut companies sell donuts by the dozen. Like, it's not somewhat. I mean, they want to make money, right? If they just had a box with two donuts, they wouldn't be making much money. However, that's really bad for us to eat a dozen donuts. You should not be eating a dozen donuts. One is okay, two maybe, but you got to stop at the third donut. Well, that's not what our gut tells us. Our gut tells us, oh, delicious donuts. Let me keep eating them. And then when you're not paying attention, you just finish off those donuts. That's how our brain works. That's how our gut works. That's how our intuitions work. Because in the savanna environment, when we came across a source of sugar, honey, whatever, apples, we needed to eat as many of them as we can reasonably stuff in our stomach in order to survive. And we're the descendants of those who survived, which means we have the instincts to do so. Thus, in the savanna environment, that worked really well. But in the modern world, that works terribly. So you want to understand, you listeners of this podcast understand and are avoiding eating the dozen donuts. And it feels hard to do that. You've had to retrain yourself, you know, to not eat a dozen donuts. You have to work against it. But hopefully right now you mostly are able to go again. No, I'll have one or two donuts and then I'll order the salad.
Yeah.
Having that reaction. That's the reaction that you want to have. And it's just as hard to not think that you're the person you're in a relationship with is a jerk as it is to avoid eating the dozen donuts.
Yeah. So it's just about you exercising that discipline and just building that awareness. And one of the things that you say in your books and in your teachings in general is to never go with your gut when it comes to making decisions. Could you tell us more about that and how that plays out?
So because of what I just said,
the cognitive bias. Yes.
Because of the cognitive biases, our gut is a very bad guide for decision making. You don't want to be eating the whole dozen donuts. That's a bad idea. But even though your gut tells you to do that, it's very intuitive and instinctive. That was the right move for the savannah. It's bad now. In the savannah, it was the right move to think that, you know, somebody who you see doing something potentially hostile or problematic to you is a jerk. Because if they actually are a jerk, that they can kill you. And that was very dangerous in the savannah. We were in a very precarious environment. So you wanted to very quickly make hostile, negative judgments of other people. And that is just how our intuitions are wired, to make quick, hostile, negative judgments, interpretations of other people based on very limited information, these snap judgments. So it was the right move for the savannah. In the modern civilized environment, both of those are wrong moves. You do not want to eat a dozen donuts. You do not want to, based on seeing somebody cut you off, just think that person is inherently and intuitively a jerk, or if they leave low socks on the floor or something like that, or if you're in the office and they turn up the temperature to warmer than you like, or something like that. So all of these things are things that people do not because they're being malicious, not because they're trying to hurt you, but because of their own internal reasons. You have to understand that everybody is a hero in their own story. Their own internal story. We all have an internal monologue going on inside our heads that we use to explain our actions. And we always explain our own actions in a positive way. And unfortunately, the same internal monologue tends to explain other people's actions in a negative way, just because of how we're wired. So we need to change this monologue. And there are specific ways of doing so that I talk about in my book. There are 12 mental habits that everybody should develop in order to develop mental fitness.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Do you have any strategies?
Yes. So I'll tell you about two strategies. One of these strategies is questions that you should ask about any decision that you don't want to screw up. So that's just about a decision. And the other strategy is to develop 12 mental habits that you want to make sure you have and that you that you engage with if you don't want to screw up. So that's what I'm going to talk about. So the first one, let's talk about the 12 techniques, mental habits that you want to build up. This is about mental fitness. So you build up your physical fitness through making sure that you eat a healthy diet. You've probably developed a number of habits about avoiding the dozen donuts, you know, ordering salad or whatever food eating habits that you developed in order to make sure that you're healthy. In the same way, you need to go against your gut intuitions and develop healthy mental habits to make sure that you have mental fitness. And again, this is based on cognitive neuroscience research that's just coming out. And my book is actually the first one to popularize the techniques on defeating cognitive biases, both in relationships and in business. So these are the first two books. So This is really cutting edge research. First one, you want to identify and make a plan to address cognitive biases. That means learning which ones you're most vulnerable to. My books, again, talk about the 30 most dangerous ones for business and 30 most dangerous ones for relationships. You want to look at these cognitive biases, learn, like I said, for me, the optimism bias and several others are very powerful, are very impactful. For others, you know, perhaps for you, Celine, the pessimism bias would be more of a problem and other. So you want to learn about which ones are a problem for you and address them. Then, second, delay decision-making. You want to not make decisions right away because our intuitive decision-making is the fight-or-flight response. And that's a bad response in most modern situations. Now, if you're in the way of a moving bus that's rushing at you, don't wait. Don't delay decision-making. Just get out of there. But the vast majority of situations are not like that. Three, mindfulness meditation. So that's a very good technique to increase your focus, and your focus is what you need to make good decisions, to delay that those poor decisions, make better ones. Four, probabilistic thinking. We tend to very much think about things in black and white. This person is good or bad. Mm-hmm. You know, this action is right or wrong. In reality, our world is made up of shades of gray. This action may or may not be the right one. Maybe there's a 30% probability that this action is the right one. Maybe there is a 70% probability that this person is a jerk. So you want to be able to have this probabilistic thinking that's much more of a shades of gray approach to life than a black and white one. Next, make predictions about the future. One of the ways to fix our poor ability to predict the future is to make good predictions about the future. Now, let's think you, somebody's driving on the road and they cut you off and you're thinking, well, you know, there's some chance that this person's a jerk. Let's see if they cut other people off. If they don't cut other people off, then it's probably the case that they're just made a mistake and they didn't see you or something like that. Or if they do keep cutting other people off, there's a higher probability that they're a jerk or, you know, they're rushing somebody sick to the hospital.
So observing their patterns. Basically.
That's right.
Yeah.
And making predictions. Making predictions first. What is your current prediction? You know, 20% possibility that this person is a jerk and then changing that otherwise. So making predictions about the future is very important. Then consider alternative explanations and options. So somebody, let's say your partner didn't throw their socks in the laundry. You know, maybe they wanted to make you upset or maybe they were thoughtless or maybe they were really tired or, you know, What are alternative explanations and options for why they did the action that you dislike? Next, consider past experiences. Now, we tend to very much battle forward into the future without thinking about the past. But the past can have really important lessons that we can learn. So if something didn't go well, do you take the time to think about why it didn't go well? Let's say you took a vacation and it was a crap vacation. You really didn't like it. You come back more tired at the end of it than you left, you did when you left. Do you know why that happened? Do you have any ideas about it? Why did that happen? Why did it occur? And how can you address it in the future? So think about the past. Think about problems. Think about how you address them. Or let's say you have a work project. You have a client presentation. It went really well. It went magnificently well. The clients loved it. You know, they hired you for more work in the future. Do you know why it went well? Do you know why they liked you? If you don't know, then you can't reproduce the right actions for the future.
So that's not true.
Make sure that you do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. You got to find out, you know, what your formula for success was in that situation.
That's exactly right. Then consider the long-term future and repeating scenarios. We tend to be very short-term oriented. It's very natural in the savannah for us to be short-term oriented because in the savannah, we can really save up our resources for the future. And it's not like if you kill, you know, 10 mammoths that you can save up their meat for refrigeration. And we couldn't invest in our professional development and improving our professional skills, right? And, you know, rock chipping. So very different from what we are right now, but we still don't really think about investing into the future. So, for example, right now, the coronavirus epidemic is a big, big problem.
Oh, yeah.
But how are we investing into the future to make sure that it doesn't happen again or that future problems like this don't happen again? We're very much short-term oriented. If you look back, a lot of the epidemiology resources were cut in recent years, and the kind of things that are being done right now, they are not addressing the problems of long-term support for institutions that would actually fix the coronavirus epidemics. Now, there's a reason that the CDC sent out faulty kits. You know, if you cut their budgets, then the people who will be hired will not be the best people because they won't have the money. And the kits that they send out will not be created by the best companies, but by the lowest bidders. So that's very clear explanations for why the response is so crappy. Now, you want to consider other people's perspectives, especially if you're in a relationship with them. If you just consider your own perspective, you're going to make a lot of mistakes because your own perspective is going to be biased and blind in a number of ways. So you want to consider putting yourself in the other person's shoes and don't think about how you would respond to that person's shoes, but what you know about them, how would they respond to the situation? So consider that a perspective. A related one, number 10, is using an outside view to get an external perspective. If you're thinking about a major decision, if you're thinking about your interaction in the relationship with someone, talk to someone you trust, get their advice. Don't just trust yourself because you can make a lot of bad decisions, especially about really important things. Next, set a policy to guide your future self and your organization. So if you're from an organizational perspective, one of the biggest problems in decision-making is hiring people. Leaders tend to make very bad mistakes when they hire people because of our intuitions that guides us in the wrong direction in hiring and promotion processes. So you want to have much of a different policy for creating a structured questionnaire to inform your hiring. So that's kind of one area. For your personal self, you might want to set a deliberate specific policy of, you know, making sure that whatever dessert you eat only one serving of a dessert, something like that, so that you don't eat a box of cookies and, you know, you only eat three cookies or something like that. Next, make a pre-commitment. So those are more private policies. Making a pre-commitment is a public pre-commitment. So let's say we can go again with eating. You can make a pre-commitment saying that, hey, I'm pre-committing to losing 20 pounds by 3 months from now, or I will send a check to a political party that I don't support, something like that. So that will make a pre-commitment that will hold you accountable and it will help change your habits going forward. So these 12 mental habits are based on the research in cognitive neuroscience and behavioral economics and how we make our decisions. These are the best interventions that you can make to change your mental habits, just like hopefully you've changed your mental habits to avoid eating the dozen donuts.
Wow. Wow, those are some great, great strategies. Thank you so much, Gleb.
You're very welcome.
So we can learn more about those in your books, right? For those who want to know more?
For those who want to know more?
Yeah.
Books,
yeah. Where can my listeners learn more about you, your books, and the services you offer?
Sure. So again, the book on the relationship is called The Blind Spots Between Us, How to Overcome Unconscious Cognitive Bias and Build Better Relationships. And the book on business is called Never Go With Your Gut, How Pioneering Leaders Make the Best Decisions and Avoid Business Disasters. Both are published by great traditional publishers, so they're available in hard copy in bookstores near you, Barnes & Noble, university bookstores, indie bookstores, or if you are worried about the coronavirus and you don't want to go out, just order them online on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and so on. And you can also check them out on Audible, so if you like audiobooks, please go there. Now, I would strongly encourage folks to check out my website, disaster avoidance experts.com. Again, disaster avoidance experts.com for blogs, videos, podcasts, articles, decision aids, guides, manuals, classes, coaching, consulting. I do online coaching for those people who are a little bit worried about the coronavirus epidemic. So you could check that out. I especially recommend that you go to disaster avoidance experts.com/subscribe for a free 8 video-based module on making the wisest decisions in all areas of life. Again, disaster avoidance experts.com/subscribe. And finally, check me out on LinkedIn. I'm very available there. Happy to connect. Tell me you heard me on this show. LinkedIn, name Dr. Gleb Tsipursky, G-L-E-B, TSIPURSKY.
Great, Gleb. It's been wonderful speaking to you and learning more from you. Thank you for sharing all this great information with us. So that brings us to the end of our conversation. I hope that you have a great day.
Thank you so much. And I appreciate you inviting me on the show, Celine.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed what you just heard, please subscribe to my podcast and feel free to share it with your friends and family. Take care and speak soon.